I'm Mark Hennick. This is So-Called Normal. Hey folks, welcome to So-Called Normal. I'm Mark Hennick. Today on the show, we have Pete Bombacci. Pete is the founder of the Genwell Project, focusing on bringing people together, on building social connection. And that's really our whole conversation on this episode was about that, about building connection and the importance of that. Peter's a fantastic speaker, coach. I've known him since his work as the country director for Movember Canada, when they really started to focus as well on men's mental health as part of that mandate. So I love my conversation with him, and especially when we got into this idea of breaking down silos, of breaking down loneliness. And sometimes I don't think we realize I qualify as an old millennial, how we've never been taught how to make friends before and how it gets so much more difficult once you get into your 30s and older to actually make new connections and to make new friendships, to try to break those silos down. So I really enjoyed my conversation with Pete about that. I think you will too. Stay tuned until after our conversation, because I want to hear your thoughts as well. And I'll give you all the information on how to share that with us. So here's my conversation with Pete Bombacci on So-Called Normal.
I had a neighbor, we were out having a walk with our dogs in the park, and she said, well, you know, there is a reason why they called social isolation punishment. Mm. Like, the worst punishment we can give to somebody is when we put them in solitary confinement.
Right.
Like, so, hello, when are we going to see that that is a punishment? So when we isolate ourselves, that's not a good thing, whether it's by choice or whether by the fact that you can't actually make that step to reach out.
In my TED talk, I don't always talk about it, but this idea of the perceptual collapse,
100%,
right? That as you become sicker, it darkens and hardens that your ability to see connections around you until it gets so tiny and tight and suffocated that you feel like you're trapped and you have no other option except to kill yourself in order to get out of it. It's an attempt to escape that crushing loneliness.
You mentioned the word hope at the end of that part of your TED talk, and it really hit me, which is that is what we're talking about here, is hope. Because when you turn off the light at the end of the tunnel, then people look for other choices.
Yeah.
And I read a study recently just about rumination. Mm. And, you know, none of us can actually, when we're ruminating, none of us tell ourselves we're the most best looking, wealthiest, living the greatest life, especially when we're competing against all the social platforms that tell us that there's no way that you can compete with the other million people, including the Kardashians and the Jenners and all these other people that we're watching. The reality is we need to turn inwards and start to understand, hey, what is it that makes people happy? And again, this is why I go back to Maslow's hierarchy, mental and physical health. And I paraphrase what he says at the very fundamental of who we are. Mental and physical health is at the bottom, and the next level up is love and belonging, human connection. Mm-hmm. And we were never taught this, because at the end of the day, up until the early 2000s, social connection happened naturally. We had bigger families, smaller houses, more places to play, safer streets. Mm-hmm. We had more front porches, less back porches. We had shorter commutes, shorter work days.
More people went bowling together.
Exactly. More clubs.
They used to go do social things together.
So everything in our lives used to be structured so that we could actually spend time together. And since probably 2005, advent of the phone, all the other technology that's come along, the reality is we are now spending less time face-to-face with other people.
Right.
And here's the challenge, is because we were never educated on the importance of it, we're now waking up 15, 20 years later and going, holy cow, we have a mental and physical health crisis going on in the world. Right. Our governments are tapped. Our health systems are stretched. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And I think it's really simple. It's not simple, but the answer is, hey, we need to start connecting, whether that's in our families, with our friends, with our neighbors, in our communities, because that's the support network that helps us get through the ups and downs that we face in everyday life.
We have to break out of this toxic echo chamber, this social rumination cycle that we're caught in, pierce that darkness and break out.
And that is what the Genwell Project is really, that's what it was intended to do and why I launched it.
So I want to talk more about the Genwell project, but I also just realized that we didn't introduce you at all.
Yeah.
We should probably talk about who you are. So tell us about yourself.
My name is Pete Bombacci, and I'm the founder of the Genwell Project, a human connection movement whose mission is to make the world a happier and healthier place by reminding people about the importance of human connection and a happy and healthy life. And probably more importantly is about inspiring them to take action, which we do a couple times a year, once in the spring, once in the fall. Times of seasonal transition when people struggle the most. And the reality is when we all do something at the same time, it makes it easier for everybody. You know, we all wear Kiss Me, I'm Irish buttons on St. Patrick's Day and drink pints of green beer and dress up in silly green garb. But 364 days the rest of the year, I don't see anybody wearing green.
Well, that's like in the mental health world in Canada, at least, we have Bell Let's Talk Day.
Yep.
I happen to be an advocate that with no other transferable skills, this is all I do is talk about mental health every day.
Yeah.
Right. So we have to break outside of that one little event, I think.
Yeah. And I think it, you know, that was Bell Let's Talk put mental health on the radar.
And continues to do
and
so.
Continues to.
Yeah. Big supporter, but we have to do it every day.
And my big piece is now what?
Right.
Now, what is the action that we want to actually encourage people to do other than, you know, and we say, Bell, let's talk, but now it's like, okay, the action, how do we rally people together? Because what I think, you know, by rallying people together, we reduce probably one of the greatest fears that most people have in taking action against anything new or different, and that's the fear of doing it alone or rejection.
Or the fear of making a mistake, too,
exactly.
I think.
And failure.
And, you know, I think that that's... I don't think, especially when it comes to mental health, that it's always wise just to act without having the conversation first. But I feel like we've been talking about mental health now for years. We've been talking about social connection for long enough that maybe it's starting to slide into just part of just a conversation and nothing more. Eventually, I think we have to do something else. So what are you doing with Genwell?
Well, the reality is we rally people around these two weekends. Suicide rates are highest in the springtime. Most people think it's actually the dark days of winter because it certainly feels like that.
Right.
But the seasonal transition of going from the dark, cold days of the spring into the pressure that comes with nicer, warmer days.
Right.
And certainly now with the exponential pressure of social media, now when you don't feel like you want to go out and get connected and spend time with other people and you're watching everybody else, that is even a worse spiral, a negative spiral than ever before. And then in September, again, 3 weeks after we come back off of our summer vacations, when hopefully we're all in a good, positive mindset, but now we're heading into the darker, colder days of wintertime. We want to be the catalyst that gets people those two weekends of the year. I want those weekends to become Canada Day, Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, Robbie Burns Day, days that we recognize in the calendar around one single mission and purpose, which is on these weekends, if you're not feeling great, maybe it's a great opportunity for you to reach out to a friend, a family member, or somebody at the office, whatever the case may be, and connect, because you may have been too busy. You might have been caught up. You might have been distracted by the many things that distract us in the world today. Mm-hmm. And if everything's going well in your life, maybe it's a great opportunity for you to think about who around you might benefit from your outreach.
Yeah.
And I think just the conversation around the importance of social connection. I think the research has been done on the area of social connection.
Sure.
But again, I don't think we've given people the tool to say, so what do I do? I know you want me to go get connected,
right.
but what do you
but
mean
how do
by
I do
that?
I was halfway through a Facebook status update when you walked in about how my social anxiety, I've had depression and social anxiety disorder for longer than I haven't, which sometimes surprises people. I mean, when people meet me, it's pretty clear that I'm an introvert, but I think it surprises people that I have social anxiety disorder because I get in front of cameras and on stages all the time. I'm one of those weirdo anxious people who likes to be looked at, apparently. but anyway, I was writing a little status and I was thinking about how my social anxiety happens basically in two levels. And it's what isolates me the most, I think, why I often feel lonely. Because in the first sense, when I try to reach out for people, I realize that I don't know how. I get stuck in the ruminations of what do they think? What do I say? I don't like being uncomfortable. So I actually, you know, somebody tells me, oh, just reach out to people. Just call that person. Just talk to that person. Right. But then I get trapped up in all this stuff that's happening in my head.
Mm.
And then the second level of it is, oh, you know, I've seen this same person 15 times and I've never actually had a conversation with them. because I don't know how. And now I feel like I'm too far into it to actually say, oh, hey, what's your name, person that I've seen 15 times, right? Yeah. So it's almost this that I get trapped in my own loneliness. I keep myself stuck in my own loneliness. So how do you, what are some of the tools, some of the suggestions, recommendations, events, whatever, that you're almost not forcing people, but you're dragging people out of their loneliness in some ways? Because that's what I need sometimes.
Yeah, I think there's two things for me. Number one being the gen well, and I'll talk about that a little further. But I think the important thing is to know that we all have that same rumination.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I have it. You know, I'm a pretty social guy, but I'd never gone to my next door neighbors and invited them to get together for a barbecue. Right. Why? Because I didn't want to be Chatty Charlie who knocks on the neighbor's door and says, hey, come on over, we're having a barbecue.
Yeah.
And for those people who have that confidence and who go door to door and get their neighbors out, that is incredible.
I'm so envious, actually. And I feel like in that person, that's the person that I want to be in some ways. But then again, sometimes when people do that to me, I roll my eyes and I just want to go home.
And at the end of the day, I think part of the reason why you roll your eyes and why many people roll their eyes to Chatty Charlie or Chatty Cathy is because we didn't understand. You know, I've been working with some of the cities across Canada and they say, Pete, but we already do all these events.
Right.
We do lots of barbecues and skating parties. And my comment to all of them and to everyone is to say, but most people have no idea why. They think it's an agenda that you need to run as a city. They believe that you, as Chatty Charlie, are coming up because you have an agenda. You're trying to do something. And so the second part of my answer to that question, Mark, is that this is what the GenWell Project is. It's now you have an excuse.
Yeah.
Now you have a reason to reach out to family, friends, neighbors, or colleagues, and we use those people specifically. Family and friends, you have an emotional connection to, so there's a reason that you might be able to create an ongoing healthy relationship, which is where the health benefits come from. And neighbors and colleagues are people that you're usually either sitting beside or walking beside every day that with a little bit of effort and with an excuse, you could actually reach out. So now when you go to the door, it's no longer, hey, I'm inviting you out because I think we should have a beer because they, you know, somebody said this is good. It's, hey, the GenWell Project suggests that this thing's really good for us. So we're going to do a GenWell Project. It's no longer me personally driving that invite. It takes the deflection off of your rumination and mine, frankly, where I go, oh, I don't want to be that guy. Right. It's like, you're no longer that guy. You're just the guy who's trying to help people.
Well, and it's quite literally countercultural to go back to that idea of the echo chamber that we're all getting caught in, that we all... you know, we all just focus on our own ideas, our own conversations in our head, our own ruminations. But then when somebody comes in and pierces that, interrupts it, tries to bring you into part of something else, that's where growth happens. Mm-hmm. It's introducing new information. It's a new stimulus for you. And there's mountains of research to show that civic engagement improves mental health. If you have a religious practice of some kind, it's not necessarily the religion, maybe, I don't know, but going to a place with a bunch of other people to be around other people, you know, volunteerism is good for mental health. So it seems like you're really tapping into this. And that's, like I say, very countercultural now when people are secluding more and more.
Yeah. And there's lots of research. Angus Reid just came out with a study across Canada. The Ontario Public Health just came out with a study. Toronto Public Health just came out with a study, basically all saying we need to find ways to break down these barriers. Right. And it's an all encompassing involvement. It can't just be government. It can't be the system. It's actually got to be people. And we were fortunate enough, Mayor John Tory was kind enough to give us an hour of his time. We did an interview, and he's also put out a challenge to all the other mayors across Canada to get on board with the GenWell Project and make these weekends a no-holds-bar connection extravaganza. Yeah. And whether that's with a family member, whether it's with a friend, whether it's with your whole street, you know, because again, when we built this movement, the idea was to make it welcoming to everybody. So if you're an introvert, as you are suggesting, you know, Mark, for you, it might be you and I having a coffee.
Right.
But for somebody, it might be the street-long potluck or ball hockey game. For somebody else, it may be just, I want to get my family together because I haven't seen them in months. We talk about how this movement, the human connection movement, is about everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got, when we post research every day, research insights, tips, tools on our platforms every day, I've got lots of research that says CEOs are some of the loneliest people in the world.
Sure.
Now, the reasons might be different.
Right.
Because this isn't just the person sitting in their basement piling away on their they're plowing away on their computer. This is about all of us. Yeah. I don't care if you're young and you're struggling with what the future looks like. How am I going to get a job? How am I going to ever buy a house? How am I going to have a roof over my head? Technology obviously is an issue. If you're a senior, we got struggles happening in the seniors community because none of us have time to go see the seniors. 40% of seniors that are in retirement residences claim to be, you know, depressed. The reality is, you know, we all thought 20 years ago when we started this outsourcing of our seniors that that was a solution to all of our seniors' problems. But the reality is they're still lonely because, you know, you and I aren't going to see them.
Right. And then we found out that, oh, we're going to become seniors one day too.
Hey, can we change this plan?
Yeah.
So, and then workplace mental health, happy, highly connected workplaces up to 22% more productive, increases engagement, collaboration, retention. But let's actually step one step deeper and say it actually makes your employees happier and healthier. Yeah. So that's a win-win. So what we need to do is stop, you know, focusing on, and this is my message to businesses, is stop focusing on building great culture, build great people. Because great people create highly productive and beautiful cultures in your workplace. And I think what's happened over the last two decades is that workplaces used to be able to just throw the party and everybody was happy because there was money going on. We lived in the greatest growth era in the history of the world up until 2008. Well, it's a different time. It's a different place. And so the solutions to the challenges that we're facing at home, on our streets, and in businesses are much different. And that's why I believe that the time for the GenWell Project is right now, for us all to hear this message first and foremost about the importance of human connection in our lives. And then secondly, rally around these two weekends to actually say, you know what? It probably is a good idea because I haven't seen so-and-so in a long time. And then whenever I do see Mark, I feel good. Like he makes me happy. And yet we're doing less of it than ever before.
You're not new to the social activism field. You were a country director for Movember Canada for several years, a point at which mental health was brought into the fold, men's mental health as well, in particular, rather. Why are you so passionate about these issues? What's the connection here for you?
That's a great question. Well, I would say that what Movember did for me was gave me an addiction. And the addiction was to knowing that I wanted to help people every day I woke up. You know, when I was overseeing Movember with an amazing team of people at Movember Canada, not only were we having fun, because success creates that, you know, energy in an office, but more importantly, and I know it with every person that worked in our organization, when we would get the calls or have the conversations with somebody who said, hey, thank you. Thank you for making my life better. There's nothing more valuable in life. You know, I've worked for money in the past. I've sold widgets and, you know, I don't want to sell widgets anymore. I want to make the world a better place. And I've seen it happen. And so, you know, part of the launch of the GenWell Project was my life, whether it's through divorce or illness or job loss or, you know, challenges that we all face. And there's more of that coming. And then secondly, it was going to Movember and meeting with people like yourself, meeting with mental health experts and hearing everybody talk about social connection, but never as the main message. It was always a secondary. It's like, oh yeah, and by the way, social connection is important. And more importantly, important to keep you healthy before the crisis comes. You know, and that's the big message about this movement is you may not need it today, but building that social connection network around you, that support network, will be there for you when the crisis comes, whether that's an illness, a job loss, a divorce, issues with your children, financial pressures. We all, and my mom, who was from a little town in Northern Ireland, you know, always told me about the way they survived through the Second World War was by building a community on her street. And so whether it was childcare, whether it was food, whether it was work, whatever the case may be, that was how you survived. And I would suggest that we're going to see some greater challenges in the world around us that we're going into. And we see the struggles globally. You know, Savan Palvetsen from Civic Action had a great quote that we just posted the other day, which is the GenWell Project is the perfect antidote to political polarization. At the end of the day, we are struggling because we're spending less time together, but it's also creating other negative influences because we We will social media post at somebody and we'll degrade them. We'll, you know, say something nasty to them. When if you and I, like we're doing right now, sat down and chatted, even if you were a left wing and I was right wing or center or, you know, wherever you were, whatever side you were on, the reality is we'd realize, hey, Mark, you're a really good guy.
Yeah, you're less likely to call somebody a dickhead to their face than you are on Twitter. And it's I've thought a lot about this, too, because contact-based education is something that we try to do in the mental health field all the time. Great researcher out at Queen's University named Heather Stewart, Dr. Heather Stewart, an epidemiologist. And the idea is that read all the books you want about people with mental illnesses, even severe and persistent mental illnesses. That's probably not going to reduce stigma. I mean, we look at the healthcare sector alone and people with lived experience of mental illnesses who have to go through the mental health system most of the time report that that's where they receive the most stigma from all these smart people who read all the books, who know all the diagnoses and all about the medications. So the antidote to that then seems to be if you actually get to know somebody with depression, with anxiety, with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and eating disorder, you'll find out, sometimes uncomfortably, oh, they're just like me. They're actually not different. They're not weird. They're not that thing we see on Law and Order. They're not violent. You know, they're just actually human beings who are going through a hard time.
Yeah.
I think that's the impact, the power of the type of connection that you're talking about.
Yeah, and I think, again, we will go through this process of education where people will become more conscious. As I say, our school system, when I went to school, great system, I think. You know, they told me a few things. They told me to have safe sex. They told me to drink water, sleep well, to eat the Canadian food guide, and, you know, and to go to the gym. You know, 30 minutes a day or 1 hour, depending on the time of the, you know, the last few decades as that's changed. But they never told us about the importance of human connection.
Right. Did they teach you how to make friends in an intentional way?
Again, I think, and the research would suggest that, you know, until you leave school, making friends is actually quite easy.
Right.
Because you're spending, there's a piece of research that says it takes 200 hours with somebody to create a lifelong friendship.
Right.
200 hours. So what the research would suggest that after the age of 30, it's very difficult for any of us to really create new friendships.
Yeah.
And so you've got to really work at it. I happen to be in a musical play, the Bedford Park Players, and we spent about 150 hours of practice time in getting ready for a three-show production. Well, you know, those are relationships that you can count on because you're getting time together with people.
Right.
But once you leave school, it becomes really difficult. That's why you find a lot of people. And again, you know, I can think of so many inspiring things that have happened with the Genwell weekends, you know, so people getting back together with their high school friends. Because to your comment about the rumination, the reality is most of us are sitting around. If you got 10 friends from high school, I guarantee you 9 of them are sitting around going, oh, God, I wish we could get back together and see the boys or see the girls or see whoever.
Then, but then they're into that second level of anxiety that I was talking about. Yeah, but it's been 4 years. And I didn't answer their last Facebook message, so they probably think I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
So you're right. How do you actually get in touch and how do you reconnect?
Well, and this is what we've got the tools.
Right.
And this is the thing about social media and technology. There are lots of beautiful things about technology. We are not an anti-technology campaign. We're a pro face-to-face human connection campaign.
Mm.
My comment to everybody is make the Genwell Project your excuse to do it.
Mm.
And now use the tool for all the things that everybody spoke about when technology first started to roll out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for all the books, all the TEDx's in the early 2000s only spoke about the positives of technology, how great it was. And we wouldn't have to go to the bank. We could talk to people around the world. I have a deaf sister. So the ability to do a FaceTime and actually communicate with your sister through FaceTime instead of, you know, texting and not having that emotional connection through the phone because you could see the face. But the reality is now 15 years later, and, you know, you see Silicon Valley refers to it as the unintended consequences are all the negatives, which, as Adam Alter out of NYU suggests, we spend 3 times as much time on apps that make us anxious or depressed than we do on the apps that make us happy.
Tell me about it. That's a study from the Journal of Obvious.
Yeah.
Because that's how I feel every day. It's like, why am I reading this stuff? This doesn't make me happy. This doesn't serve me. So then how can I break out of it? Why am I doing it?
Right. And that's and Mark, that's the whole thing about the GenWell is like my goal is every day I want to post information that creates greater awareness for people. Because if I can create the awareness of the things that are getting in the way of you doing the thing that will make you happier and healthier, and if I can actually explain to you all the ways in which you can get connected because that gives you these benefits.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm hoping that on these two weekends, if when you're talking to a friend leading up to GenWell weekend, my hope is maybe even this September on GenWell weekend, which is the 20th, 21st, and 22nd of September, I hope in the next little while you have a conversation with somebody and they say, hey, Mark, what are you doing for GenWell weekend? And you say, actually, you know, I hadn't thought about it, but hey, what are you doing? Why don't we get together and let's have a coffee or let's why don't we call so-and-so or let's get the all we want to be is the excuse. Yeah. For you to actually go, you know what, I should reach out to those high school buddies and get them back together. Because those are the people that will put the smile on your face. You'll go right back to, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, depending on who you are. And those will be the moments that you will cherish for the rest of your life, and especially when you're on your deathbed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Now, how are you, you mentioned John Tory, mayor of Toronto, has encouraged other municipalities to do this as well in cities. So how can cities actually enable this in practical terms? So it's great to tell people to go out and connect. What are they doing to actually make that happen?
Well, I think for every mayor, there's an opportunity to, A, to communicate. Because first and foremost, as we talk about, people don't know the information.
Right.
And I think a lot of cities are doing great work out there. But we need to start off by actually educating people on the information.
Yeah.
And then on GenWell weekend, whether the city wants to activate something so they could host something. And frankly, what I'd rather see is I'd rather have the mayor go to his own street and not do something for the whole city.
Right.
Because what the research would suggest is that the relationships that are going to bring you the greatest happiness and health are the ones that are going to be long-term engaging relationships. So, you know, I always use Downsview Park as the example here in Toronto, which is, you know, me inviting a million people to come up to Downsview Park to see the Rolling Stones like they did back in the SARS days. That's not really going to build the healthy, ongoing connection relationships that you need. The relationships that will give you those greatest health benefits are friends, family, neighbors, and colleagues. You know, we talk about strangers and the importance of saying hi to strangers because that does give you short-term, immediate, you know, an uplift in your emotion. But that's not where the long-term health benefits are.
To go so deeper. Anybody for in a long-term relationship can tell you that you feel just as connected to somebody sitting on the couch watching TV together, not saying a word, because you've known each other for so long.
Yeah.
The as you can from you know a couch. Casual, hi, hello, how are you? Walking down
so
the
our message to the mayor is A, communicate it.
Yeah.
B, take some kind of action. But, you know, and what I'd love to do, like we did with John Tory, is I'd like to get every one of them to film a video, a sincere, authentic, real video talking about why you, Mr. Mayor or Mrs. Mayor, believe that this movement is so important. We've worked with BIAs. We had a BIA out in Halifax who, the Quinpool BIA, who used the GenWell project as their excuse to get local community out, not to go spend money in their local business, but to get the community out because that's what's right for the community. And guess what? When you actually bring people out for the purpose of, you know, health, happiness, and goodness, you think they're going to support the community? Yeah, you're darn right they will.
Yeah, sure.
You know, because again, it's about going deeper for people and actually understanding what are people struggling with the most right now.
Yeah.
And if human connection is it, then every business, you know, even the GenWell Project is always seeking new partners.
Yeah.
You know, Molson Coors is coming on as a partner for the September campaign. And kudos to them. They've been bringing people together over beer for a couple hundred years. And the reality is every business that is at the center of bringing people together, whether it's package goods company, it could be about transportation because it's helping people get connected. You know, we're talking to some insurance companies who are all about prevention. We're talking to employee assistance programs because we have to stop waiting till people are in crisis before we do something.
Well, and we see this in workplaces at these companies too, would certainly see this where when you have good when your staff feel like citizens of the company, right? When they have such a tight-knit network with their own workplace, they're going to be more productive. They're going to go the extra mile for their workplace. They're going to try harder and make a better culture.
Yeah, no question. The research is pretty clear on that. And I think the important thing is to think that the world is changing. So your employees, when business was booming and bonuses were there and pay increases were there, you know, people were out living lives, big lives, and, you know, everything was covered off. Now we're living in a world where some of your employees are probably struggling just to keep food and shelter, you know, in their lives. And so what we as employers, or I think the opportunity for employers, is to, again, swim upstream and now start to think, to my point earlier about building great human beings, is what are the things that you can provide? And if connection is a huge issue for your employees, and, you know, again, we all put the business facade on every day when we walk in the workplace. And we can see lots of research about being alone in a crowd. You know, at the end of the day, I can go through my day and I can put on the facade and do what I need to do. But what businesses, I think, have a great opportunity to do is say, what could we do to help our people as human beings when they leave the office? Yeah. Because on Monday morning, when that person walks in, if they've been isolated all weekend, they're not going to be the most productive person. No. And so helping them understand, helping them get connected with not only their internal people, but Molson, for example, is going to be giving every employee a 6 or 12 pack on Genwell weekend and encouraging them to go home and share it with a friend, a family, or a neighbor.
Wow, that's creative.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful way to put their product at the center of these meaningful and important occasions.
Right.
And so those are the types of things that we can inspire with great partners coming on who have the ability to spend money instead of marketing the new flavor or the new package SKU or the new this, that, or the other. The reality, let's put meaning back into the work that you do so that not only do your employees feel part of it, to your point, but secondly, so that consumers go, hey, you know, you're doing good. And I know the CEO of Unilever, just recently coming out of Cannes, said the largest growth brands in their portfolio are the ones directly linked to a purpose.
Right.
And so now they're looking, I think they followed up that by saying they're looking to get rid of some brands that aren't, they can't find that purpose.
Right.
And so I think there's a real opportunity in the mental health space, in the wellness space, which is where Genwell is, you know, helping people in the mental health space, in physical health, is an opportunity for brands to step up here, both from an internal standpoint as a business, but I think as a greater communication level and helping people understand this important need.
Well, I feel very firmly that, you know, my area is in suicide prevention, and that the way that we stop people from killing themselves is to have them connected, to build as many anchors, as many lines to keep them in the world as possible. If you feel connected to the world, you're less likely to want to leave it.
Mark, I, you know, I'm going to ask you right on here if I'm allowed to, but
please.
I want you to become an ambassador for the Genwell Project, because at the end of the day, Mark, you've lived experience. You talk about it endlessly, and you understand
tiringly.
No.
I think.
It will only be tiring when the whole world has heard the message and has taken action.
Yeah.
And you know, again, I do have some people who go, Pete, why are you doing this? Like, you know, why are you? I've given up 3 years of my job, my career, and I've done it because I want to change the world. And I know that the need is there.
Right.
And as you and I both know, we're talking about a very small percentage of people who've heard this and who are taking action.
Yes.
You know, 50% of people in Canada don't know their next door neighbor's name. We know that 40% of people, I think this was in the Angus Reid report, you know, feel lonely often or sometimes in this country. You know, we're in a country that's filled with wealth and, you know, beauty and all this wonderful stuff, but we got people that are struggling each and every day. And until those people have a greater sense of connection through whatever means. On Genwell Weekend, to your point about volunteering, we call it connecting with purpose. So for some people, it'll be about, hey, Mark, you know, let's get together because I wanted to see you. I might feel better. For other people, it might be thinking about somebody else.
Right.
And thirdly, hey, if everything's great, maybe you can actually go get a group of your friends and go clean a park, go volunteer at a senior's home, you know, go hang out and ride some bikes with some kids. Yeah. Go
and
play.
It's nothing to do with networking. It's not how can I advance myself and my career, even though that's an important part, obviously, of life, but it's not that.
And I think, you know, to me, and I did have a conversation with a business leader last week, and he said, you know, I'm thinking of running a networking event. And I said, you know, can we call it something other than networking? Can we talk about building relationships, meaningful relationships where we actually connect with people? That's where the relationships or that's where the networking comes from.
Yeah.
You know, when do you feel most comfortable in reaching out to somebody and asking for some help?
Yeah.
You know, the line I always use is, when was the last time you went out of your way to help somebody you didn't know?
Mm.
You know, but if you just meet them quickly, there's no, you know, there's no ability, in my opinion, to authentically reach out and ask for help. But if you actually had a great conversation and talked about them as a human being, you know, family, other things, and that takes time, to me, that's where the real value comes.
There's a question that's been nagging me for the last few minutes. if you'll indulge me,
go for it.
Because it's probably a bit personal. But you mentioned your sister that she was deaf. Older, younger than
older?
You? Older.
Yep.
What was that like for you with an older sister who was deaf, trying to connect with her? I imagine it must be terribly isolating to be deaf in a world of hearing people, right?
Well, it is, that is a big question, Mark. My sister is, she's soon to be, I think she's about 60. She has, and she does battle some mental health issues as well, which I think, you know, could have been exacerbated because of the handicap. But the reality is deafness is a very challenging disability.
Mm.
And the reason is that nobody can tell. Because I can still remember as a kid going in a grocery store lineup and the cashier said, thank you very much, as she passed back the change and my sister turned and walked away. And I heard her say something along the lines of, oh, what a bitch or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to turn to her and say, hey, I'm sorry. She's deaf. She didn't actually hear you.
Right.
And so I can tell you my sister's world has over the last 2-3 decades turned very internal. And the only people that she wants to hang out with are deaf people because she believes that the rest of the world doesn't understand.
But she has a community of people who do.
Yep.
Right?
But she's, you know, like many people that become, that get older, you know, your circle shrinks.
Yeah.
But when you're deaf, your circle really shrinks. And then geography becomes a challenge. Mm. And she's got some long-term, you know, she's working through a shoulder injury that's taken her out of the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So now what does she do all day other than going to the occasional physiotherapy appointment? But she sits at home and she's isolated and lonely.
Mm.
And so my brother and I, and my brother's been doing yeoman labor on trying to find her a new job, to helping her stay connected. And, you know, it actually, we're working with the Bob Rumble Center for the Deaf to get her into social programs that actually allow her to go and connect with deaf people on a regular basis. It's a very challenging life.
Sure.
And one where my brother and I will always be on call for, you know, issues that pop up.
I don't know, you know, I'm not in your experience, but part of my reaction to that is what an exhausting privilege to be that person for your sister.
You probably couldn't have said it any better. And I'll tell you, it's been at times it's a challenge.
Sure. I imagine most times it's probably a challenge.
Yeah. I would actually say, Mark, that part of the reason I am who I am today and why I actually care is because I've lived with somebody who's had a disability her whole life.
Sure. That by its nature is isolating.
100%.
Yeah.
And so I've seen the impact of that. I lost my dad when I was a little guy. So I dealt with those struggles. And my mom, who was, I think, 54 when my dad passed away, basically lived the next 30, 40 years of her life in isolation.
Alone. How old were you when your dad died?
13.
13.
Yeah. So, you know, that's had, and then, you know, not until I was probably late in my 30s sometime did I actually realize what I lost.
Sure.
Because at the time, all you knew was, you know, dad wasn't there. But, and I think there was some financial insecurities that that probably popped up in the short term. But I think the emotional growth and the emotional support that you get by having, you know, mother and father, you know, around and supporting, hey, you know, one of our partners is Big Brothers Big Sisters of Toronto. And, you know, they've been, they were, you know, and I, we jokingly say this with the folks over there, you know, I think Big Brothers Big Sisters was the original GenWell project. You know, over 100 years ago, they realized the value of human connection.
So just you and your sister, or you have other siblings as well?
I have a brother as well.
A brother as well. Younger or older?
Older.
Older. Okay, so you're the youngest.
Yes.
Okay, the baby of the family.
Boy, does that create complications.
A big brother and a big sister, I bet. Yeah, yeah. Dad was sick or?
Heart attack.
Heart attack.
Yeah.
So did you have anybody then that you were able to talk about your grief with? Was that a conversation that you had?
Mark, you're hitting on a lot of touchy points. And,
and don't answer anything that
But it's literally things, Mark, that I've come to the enlightenment of in the last decade.
Right. Well, and it's stuff that I think is so central to the work that you're doing right now. This is why I'm curious.
I think it is the enlightenment that I've come across. So when my dad passed, I think what happened, and it's interesting, again, ties back to GenWell. So initially, my friends became my go-to. And my sister has her challenges. My brother's 3 years old. He's a slightly different guy than I am, who looks at the world a little different. And so, you know, the bonds weren't there that you would have hoped for. And certainly losing a father, you know, the tight-knit family that, you know, we all desire wasn't there. And my mom certainly struggled for a few years in coping with that. With that loss, as she should, and she did an incredible job surviving through that with three kids under the age of majority when my dad passed. But you know, I really reverted to my friends as my community, and it's funny. I say this to people about the GenWell project: is, you know, my mom was never educated on the importance of human connection. She certainly lived it.
Sure.
But again, our focus was go get a job, make money, buy a house, get a family, you know, all the things that we were kind of led to believe were the things that created success. And I can actually remember my mom say to me, hey, would you stop hanging out with your friends? Like, go get a job.
Right.
Go do something.
Right.
In hindsight, 2020, and it's not her fault by any means, and she was an incredible lady. But she was actually encouraging me to change what I was doing, which now looking back was actually how I was coping.
Right.
And so I would say I was confused. I've always been a giving guy. I've always been a social guy. And I need that. I sincerely, if I don't see people on a daily basis, I can feel lonely and isolated.
Well, and I think that's almost the definition of who we are. We are who we need to be in this moment.
Yeah.
Right? And the reality you needed to reach out to people in that
moment. Yeah, and loneliness is obviously subjective. For some people, seeing one person a day is all they need.
Sometimes that's too much in my case.
Exactly, totally. And so that's the important part, again, about GenWell is that, hey, you know, if this GenWell weekend you don't need to see anybody,
right,
no problem. That's great. You know, wait for the next one, or maybe you can help somebody else. Mm. But the reality is, you know, my group of friends was my support network. And at times in my teens and 20s, a lot of times I would be told, hey, like, why don't you go do something? When in actual fact, I was doing something. I was taking care of my health.
Yeah, there's lots of different ways that people figure this stuff out, right?
Yeah.
And I think I've fallen into the trap, and I think many others have, of assuming that there's one right way, one narrow path through which one must pass in order to recover. It turns out there's actually all kinds of routes to figuring out those kinds of struggles, grief, loneliness, whatever.
As we talked about, you know, I think before we came on air, just about Maslow's hierarchy. At the end of the day, to me, Maslow had it right back in 1943. And when you look at the hierarchy, and I paraphrase mental and physical health, social connection, work or a contribution, aspirations, and then giving back, you know, self-actualization, you know, he didn't tell you what to do with each one of those things. He just told you those are things you should be focused on. And it really is up to us to determine internally what You know, for mental health, what do I need to do to maintain my mental health? Mm-hmm. For my physical health, what do I need to do? For my love and belonging, how much do I need? And these are all the conscious decisions that we need to be more conscious of, especially for those 40% who say that they're lonely or isolated on a regular basis. You know, for the rest of us, whether you're at work and you're working, you know, most businesses have less people today than they did a decade ago. Mm-hmm. Well, that means the people that are there are probably working longer than 10 years ago, mm-hmm. which means they're probably more isolated, again, for different reasons, but it's still taking them away from connecting with people that might make them happier and healthier. Mm-hmm. So we're all struggling in whatever walk of life you're in. And the important thing is just hearing this message. And then with the average person spending over 10 hours a day on screens, all different forms of screens, if you sleep 8 hours a day, we're starting to run out of, and you work 8 hours a day, we're running out of time, people. You know, so it's about raising that consciousness of here are the things that are getting in your way of spending more time, which will make you happier and healthier. So, you know, maybe at least on these weekends, and what we see from our survey, on these weekends, get connected. And our surveys show that if we can get you to do it once, you remember how much fun it was, how much you missed it, and how much you need it. And that's the power of creating a movement that gets people to do something and build healthy connection habits moving forward.
Yeah. Well, Pete, I'm so grateful for the work that you're doing in this space. I think it's so necessary. After all this, do you feel connected?
You know what, Mark, right now, sitting in a room, having a conversation with you, I feel inspired, powerful, connected and everything. But I'll tell you, 2 hours from now, I could be sitting at myself working on my computer, having sent out another 50 emails to people, getting no response, one response, three responses, whatever the case may be. And I can feel lonely and isolated because, you know, I don't feel like I'm moving this forward or moving me forward. So today, as I sit here in front of you, I feel very connected. But, every day is a battle for, I think, all of us.
I think it is, too. So that's why we need to do what you're suggesting and create more of these opportunities, more of these excuses to connect. Because the reality is not everybody's going to feel connected and happy all the time. But if we have lots of points along the way, which is what you're working toward, I think that'll help us all.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, we've seen celebrities of all, you know, having all the money in the world doesn't guarantee you're going to be happy. And so, you know, we can look at a lot of people in all walks of life and, you know, we can all put on the facades. But at the end of the day, every one of us will lose our parents. Every one of us will go through some type of probably a health issue at some point in our life. You know, maybe you'll have some divorce. Maybe you'll have, you know, personal health issues. The reality is we will all go through struggles. And therefore, the importance of human connection to not only cope with the situation, but to find solutions and build resilience as we move forward is critical. Yeah. And I think what we need today is only the start of what we're going to need tomorrow. You know, we all are blessed to be, first off, in this country, but secondly, you know, to live in a world where, you know, there is opportunity everywhere.
Yeah.
But let's not always think of opportunity from the sense of financial.
Yeah.
You know, there's opportunity to help people every day, which will, as Maslow said in self-actualization, you know, to me, his definition was, you know, the day you realize that life is not about you, but what you can do to help others is when the point of giving becomes so important. And for me, the idea of getting up and understanding that giving isn't only money, but it's holding a door, it's a smile, it's a joke, it's kindness, it's all the things that we do, but maybe we've lost the focus on how good they are for us and also for other people. So again, part of the GenWell project is, hey, go help some people, do some good, because we can all benefit from understanding how much goodness we can give, even if we don't have the money to do so.
Where can people learn more about the GenWell Project?
They can head over to genwellproject.org, check out the website, follow us on any of the platforms to find out what we post every day, which is information, research, tips, and motivation to help build your healthy connection habits starting today. And then the third week after September, this upcoming September 20, 21, 22, all we want you to do is register your intention to get connected face-to-face. You know, you can tell us a long story story, or you can register in 2 minutes or less just to say, I hear what you're saying. I want to be part of the global human connection movement, and I want to make this happen. So, because together we will make the world a happier and healthier place, one face-to-face conversation at a time.
Pete Bombacci, thanks for coming in and talking to me today.
Mark, an absolute pleasure and really great to see you.
That's it. That's Pete. I love Pete so much. His conversation, you know, to sit across the table from him, and he's so engaging and engaged, it's hard not to have a really meaningful conversation with somebody like Pete. So he really does live his values. He really lives what he's talking about here as the founder of the GenWell Project. So the next, as you heard in the conversation, the next GenWell Project weekend is on September 20, 2021 and 2022, and you can register your event or learn more information about it at genwellproject.org. So I want to thank Pete for coming on the show. I also want to thank the people who make this show possible. This show wouldn't exist without the help of Adrian and Kimberly here at Entertainment One, and Dave, our great editor, who brings it all together. If you enjoyed it, and I hope you did, please head on over to Apple Podcasts, scroll down and subscribe, leave us a rating. Give us your thoughts in the comments section if you like, and share the show. Share it on wherever we are. We're everywhere on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, everywhere else. You can find me, tag me at Mark Hennick, at MarkHennick. And you can learn more about me too over at MarkHennick.com. That's MarkHennick.com. You can get the show wherever you listen to your podcast. So Apple Podcasts isn't the only option. You can go to Google, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you find us. There's plenty of places where you can listen to So-Called Normal. Follow me on any of them. That's it, I think, for the show today. We're here every Monday, so come on back. I'm going to have another really great conversation with a new guest to expose you to next week. So I'm Mark Hennick, and this has been So-Called Normal.